Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach. Thanks for joining me for another episode. In this episode, we have a guest on, Trish, who has FSHD. Kind of wants to leave the last name out of it. Totally respect that. But she reached out to me back in December to try to be on a show, and she has some very cutting through kind of the BS, so to speak, on being diagnosed, being handed nothing to help you with that diagnosis, and even in the process of seeing your doctor, why are so many of us frustrated? And she airs some of that frustration, but also some possible helpful tips for us in the FSHD community. How do you handle those situations? How can you overcome? She's a woman that has 6 kids, husband had colon cancer, all within that time that she was being diagnosed with FSHD, has overcome a lot. And she shares her story in this episode. So thank you for being here. That is coming up. Within that episode, though, no question, the best line I've ever heard in FSHD radio, and podcast history, maybe. I can't remember all the lines, but you'll hear it when you hear it. And I think you'll chuckle and enjoy that part of the show. So that's my teaser. That is my teaser for that. Also, don't forget, check out all our past episodes. You can find them at your places you find your podcasts, either Spotify or so forth. Also on YouTube, check us out through social media, review, rate, follow, all those things you can do to plug the show, share it on social, love more people to get involved. Family members, people involved with the FSHD community, love to hear more. As this show continues its rebrand process, I'll stop talking about that at some point and know this is just the show. All the other past episodes of when it was FSHD Society Radio is there for you too, but this really is highlighting the community and the people within it. And I'm so glad that you can be a part of this. It's been really a ton of fun for me to talk to these people. It's just really opened up the door for questioning a little bit more of my opinions, so to speak. And which leads me to this before we start our guest segment. Have you ever Googled recently, especially those that have not recently diagnosed, what is FSHD? Have you ever done that? It's fascinating. It's fascinating what the Google world thinks what FSHD is. Some of it is accurate, of course, and this and that. Who gets FSH muscular dystrophy? That's interesting. May develop in a child or parent, it says, both men and women. That's good, right? That's accurate. There was one in there. Is FSHD an autoimmune disease? Some researchers claim to believe the disease is associated with an autoimmune reaction. It's not, as far as I thought. So that's interesting. A lot of misnomers out there. Is there a cure, right? That one's on the drop down when you do that. There is no cure. We know that. Is there truly no treatment? That I don't know. And we kind of visit a little bit of that in this conversation today. Can your PT be better than your doctor, right? Sometimes I think that might be. Your physical therapist might be able to help you more than your doctor can. And then within that Google search I have, what is FSHD? It is basically FSHD fatal. And then I always, I think people find too much reassurance if it is or isn't. Like that's some type of hard, fast answer. Well, if it's not, then you should be fine. We know that the lifespan is shortened, right? And I'm not sure of the big difference. To me, that's still kind of life-threatening. It feels that way. It feels like you're being gypped, right? My doctor would say FSHD won't get you, but it'll do something to your body that will. That's nice. That's reassuring. Then I was followed up with, or, you know, you get hit by a bus, the randomness of life. So in this episode, we attack those kind of, I guess, if you want to call it taboo, so to speak, people really don't maybe just say it like they want to say it. I don't want to protect the community of its feelings, meaning when I say that, like, let's just say it like it is. It's okay to be frustrated sometimes. It's okay to be angry sometimes. It's okay to wonder where to go with that information or go with that energy. Trying to stay positive, absolutely, but don't be Pollyanna positive. I hate that. That doesn't work at all. You're not fooling anybody. So we unpack a lot of that in this episode here with Trish, one of the people in our FSHD community. So Thanks for listening. And here is that segment. So as mentioned, today's guest is Trish. She's reached out to me via email, which I really want more and more of you all to do and connect with me and talk a little bit about your story and about what's happening in your world. And Trish did that. And that's how this connection started. And after some back and forth, and Trish is super patient person with me and my schedule and things. And she's been gracious to spend some time with us today as we bring her in to talk a little bit about what more and more this FSHD Straight Talk podcast is about, which is the people with FSHD. So welcome, Trish. Thanks for being here. Thanks for spending some time and reaching out to the show as you did as this all started.
Thank you for having me. Thank you also for being sort of a spokesperson for our community that could use one.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I always feel like weird when people say that. I suppose I've kind of threw myself in that spot. I want to feel like I want to be a good representation, which I believe is where you're here for, you too. I think there are topics that, you know, you mentioned in the email reaching out to me that is, you know, deep, profound, certain subjects that I think some of us even get frustrated over in terms of diagnosis, mm-hmm. in terms of handling the disease and so forth. Before we go too far down that road and get into the weeds, what part of the country do you live in? Your FSHD story as well. Maybe we can kind of start there.
Okay. So, it's hard to say. I'm currently in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. My diagnosis was acquired in Pennsylvania, where I live most of my life. So I'd like to add that sort of lends itself to think like, okay, you have a lot of research universities. There's probably, mm-hmm. you're getting a lot of the cutting edge information. Thus far, it doesn't matter where you are. You're just going to kind of be going down the same path, and some of it's going to feel comforting, and some of it is going to be really frustrating. And that could be all in the same appointment you go to.
My God.
Yes. So I started in Pennsylvania, lived most of my life there, and then got to a point where my husband and I had sort of just had it with the cold weather. And, we lived in an urban environment where we were right outside of Philly. I was born in Philadelphia. So I'd always lived in that hustle and bustle. And we both thought we were ready for a change. He had cared for his aging parents, and they had both recently passed, and we decided now was the time. This was during COVID, so it gave us the opportunity to not be leaving for a job. And as most of us stared at our own four walls, we decided we needed they either needed to be spruced up or changed altogether. So we decided to change them all together, spruce them up so that we could do that too. So my husband and I and the six kids, we relocated to South Carolina. Wow. And so we did, we got that warm weather, we got that space that we desired, where the kids could run out and catch a frog or, just bike the neighborhood. And then a few million people followed us over the next couple of years. So, it's been an interesting experience, but yeah, it's where we are now.
Good for you for making a move. Also, because of the weather too. I mean, as many know, mm-hmm. I live in Wisconsin and it's not always great. And it's like 6 to 8 months of cold weather and jackets and, mm-hmm. Slip and fall potentials are a little higher than when it's in mm-hmm. the middle of July mm-hmm. or August, right? So
yeah.
I get it. Yeah. Like, time to move away from that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. is there anything though about, when you lived in Philly, the hustle and bustle, as you mentioned, is there anything about that you miss?
Absolutely not. I can say that with certainty because I will say right now I'm in Philadelphia. We came back for a visit, and we haven't delved into it yet, but due to my husband's illness, we were, tapped into a lot of, nonprofit resources. And one of the things was that my kids had attended camp for parents affected by cancer for many years. And there's a fundraiser every year that we never were able to go to. So this year coincided with our spring break. So we flew up and to attend this fundraiser. And most of my family is still here. So that taste being able to get back into the taste of the hustle and bustle, it just reaffirms my comfort of where I am. And, you know, I know my family, they cringe at it because, you know, and I think a lot of Northeasterners or even, you know, those north, wherever you are, you kind of like say, I'm just going to do this because this is just where I've always been.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, that's it. And I'm like, no, there's a change. It can happen. And it's good. Like, yeah, because my dad was like, it took, you know, let's say he's not even 10 miles probably from the airport. It was an hour and a half drive. And he was like, oh, we'll try a different way. Well, I think it was like another hour and a half going the other way. So, you know, sometimes I can, you know, obviously you always like lose track, I should say, you know, down there. And I'm like, man, there's 5 cars on the road today. Where did all these cars come from? And then I'm back here. I'm like, oh, okay. I can relax.
Right. Nice.
You know, and maybe I'm exaggerating the difference a bit. Because again, like I said, it's been a boon. I obviously, my county that I live in now, South Carolina, is the 10th largest growing county in the entire United States. Yeah. So we really started a trend, but it's still not to the same capacity that like this, you know, urban environment brings. It's just,
It's just not the same, right? It's not the same.
People. Yes.
Some people hunger for that difference. Yeah. I always commend people for like making that jump. It takes a little bit of courage to do something like that. Maybe more for others, you know, than some, but
yeah,
regardless, it's always a big change. I mean, you have 6 kids. That's a large thing in my book.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want this to sound braggadocious because it's not, but if it was any much of a big leap for anybody, it was huge for us.
Yeah.
Huge. Because, you know, I have my situation, my husband had his situation, and we had 6 kids, and we had been in our house for 19 years. So it wasn't like smooth sailing on any stretch of the imagination. I mean, maybe when you want something.
Stuff. Yeah. That's a lot of stuff.
19. It was a lot of stuff. He pulled out Legos I didn't even know existed. And Star Wars toys that, you know, I was like, where did you hoard all this weird stuff? Nice. But to the benefit of our move, it became more accessible. You know, we were able to acquire a little space. Like, let's be honest, the house that we bought up here, like, it sold for more than our giant house down in the south. So, you know, that was like a real benefit to us, including the yard and the driveway, a 2-car garage that we acquired, something that was like not heard of in our environment. So, you know, now he had these toys he kept under his desk, and if the kids wanted to play, he'd take a break and play with them. So there was a lot of benefits to it. He unfortunately didn't stay with us that long after we moved. After 3 months, he had passed away unexpectedly because he took a turn that wasn't seen. So,
yeah, that's unfortunate. Oh, my goodness. So there's been that, right? There's been a lot of those ups, downs, you know, and concentrating a little bit on the downs granted today, but you know, there's ups in life there too. But when you were diagnosed, you mentioned you were diagnosed in email to me at like 40, shortly after the birth of your 5th child. So then yet you had another then, right? Obviously after the diagnosis fact. So your decision together to have children after diagnosis, was that a conversation you had? And I always ask because this has come up in conversations too with other guests. Mm-hmm. And all that. We talk about having kids. I have kids, you know, and people have asked me, well, would you have them if you knew and this? So I'm always interested, you know, just kind of people's take if you're willing to answer. I know that can be a tough question.
Oh, no. I mean, if I'm going to be on this forum, then I think that, you know, it's like, I believe, and you might as well, you know, do it the right way, which would be to be as honest as possible. No, I mean, I don't want to sound irresponsible. I'm very college educated, work. It was not a conscious decision to have our 6th child. I will say that.
Okay.
Is he a blessing? Yes.
I bet.
Yes. Was he a surprise? And the society would turn that? Yes. You know, my husband was doing chemo. So for all intents and purposes, that wasn't supposed to happen, you know, and we took certain measures, but God had a different plan. And I have to say that we rely on that a lot of times, because otherwise, why would some of this make sense at all? is that God has a plan, so you just have to go with it. He's a blessing, and you know, and all my children seem fine. I've been reassured, although I can't seem to get any sort of certainty from a lot of my medical evaluations, except they've said it does not appear to me to be something that I could easily transfer to them, given that there is no there's no further evidence of it in my family lineage and from what I've had so far in terms of what is it. And do I have a lot of faith in that? Not entirely, you know, because I think if you've had any taste of genetics, it's that they don't have all the answers. And so I can only take with a grain of salt that reassurance, but I'm going to hold on to it because at this point, everyone, you know, does seem to be doing well. And that's a really tough question. If I knew that before I had my first, you know, she's 20 now, would I have really changed the trajectory of our family? I don't know. That would be sad to think that, because every one of them are so special, right? So to think like, oh, would I have not, you know, allowed for, you know, one of mine to be here?
Right. And then like to deprive the rest of us from knowing them possibly, or interacting with people, or their differences where they make it. And and so forth. Right. I totally agree. I think it would have been in the conversation, but I think we would have had them anyway. Now I'm adopted, so maybe I would have been like, felt admirable, like, well, then we'll do it this way, you know, but, for me and my wife, I think it was, I mean, we really didn't talk much about it after the fact because I was diagnosed. We already had the two kids. We didn't plan on having more anyway. That was the plan. So we're like, when you're diagnosed at 40, I was also diagnosed at 40 years old. What was kind of your signs that made you go, something's not quite right here?
That was very hard because I will say I have been vegetarian most of my life. I've been athletic most of my life, but I also was pregnant half my life, right? So it's easy
that's
to
true,
say.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just the reality. I just thought, you know, oh, I can't lift the baby up all the way, but you know what? She's 10 pounds. Like, that's probably why. Like, and everyone would say, your babies are so solid, you know? And I'd have some trouble getting up like a certain height of something. I'd be like, you know what? I probably need to do more, more muscle conditioning. I'm just out of shape. Or, you know, I've been running exclusively. I should be doing more, you know, squats or something. Then it was maybe I need to add more protein. I really need to add more protein. So it was just odd little weaknesses that were able to explain away for a long time, but that did hang in the back of my thought process for a while. But when you know you're busy raising others and, you know, working, and you're part of a family and a community, you know, unless you can't actually do something, could I not maybe put some things away? Well, sure, but I could get it done. I might struggle with like maybe reaching that spot in the back of my hair, but I could still do it, and I could also accommodate well. And then I think you learn to accommodate well that you don't even realize how much you've accommodated until someone points it out to you, you know? That's it. It was just,
do you recall one of those things that someone might have pointed out to you? Like, why do you do it like that? Or do you realize this?
Not something I've done as an accommodation, I don't think offhand. It's more that, and I know this is the family show, so I'll keep it clean, but it was just my husband's coworker would always say, "You have the sexiest walk." She's a woman, but she would just say, "You have the sexiest." And
really,
now I realize that was just the manifestation of this condition, because
are you trying to say that people with FSHD have sexy walks? Is that what I'm hearing, Chris?
Like, it's a whole way in which you say it, right? Let me say, I don't always feel that way when kids are like, "Why do you walk that way?" I'm just like, shut up. But it did, you know, look, again, if you want to look at the world with the glass half full, there's always a way to interpret it. Right. But it's just been more clear as a reason, like, oh, that's why Sue always thought I had a sexy walk. It was probably my hip, girdles running
Now,
out. But
I must say that that, like, starting off here, right? Okay, we've done this newer branding show, whatever, for a couple of months. That is by far, so far, the best line given by a guest. A sexy walk. FSHD people have a sexy walk. I love it. I'm writing it down like three times to make sure I have that in my wrap up. That's awesome.
But yeah, my mom would be proud that I'm associated with that line too.
Well, I mean, like you said, you got to see the positive, right?
You
positive.
Do.
You usually get now the reaction of people saying, are you okay? Like, something wrong with your knees? Oh, no. I'm like, something's wrong with everything. It's not just that.
Right. Well, and like I previously mentioned, my husband said, I'd say, like, my brother, tell me this is what it is. And he would be like, you've always done this. You're like, you're the same. No, you're normal.
Yeah.
Like, and I was normal to him, and that was fine. So,
all that matters.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes I will say I get frustrated because obviously a lot of our life was taking care of him. As I became more pronounced, say, in my features and my sexiness, I'll just say it that way. It was a lot of taking care of him. It was sick. I mean, he powered through for a man having six kids and cancer. He did so much. He would go to, he would have chemo every 2 weeks. He'd be sick for 3 days and then, try to knock it and get up. But some days he wasn't. And then, the smell of my tacos made him sick. And that was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
So it was, there was less time to focus on, well, what is my issue and stuff like that. Maybe that's a good thing too, because then you just power through it and not get stuck on,
True. Yeah. Distraction.
The negatives.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Putting the energy where someone else needs it. So you were diagnosed first with FSHD, and then your husband started the fight against colon cancer. Do I have that in the right kind of time?
That's correct. Yes. Yeah. I was about June, because it was around our anniversary, and then he was February of the following year. So.
So what was that like? Can you kind of take us in the room a little bit of, once again, kind of a more intimate type conversation you have with your spouse, granted, but emotionally, because you both know now about something about each other there. You're putting out the sickness and in health vow right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, I can vividly remember when we went for my appointment and I brought him with me, because I was like getting kind of worried that it was something a little bit more than just like, eat more protein. Because I had been through a lot of tests with my regular doctor, and then he sent me down to the neurologist. And, but this is like Philly, it's filled with people going to special stuff and doing this. And, and when he said it, and, Bob was there, and he was just like, again, and we had the baby with us too, because at that point he was, just trying to stay close to mom. And I was like, what do you think? He's like, oh, I think you're still the same, and that was just the reassurance. And again, like, we didn't do anything with it. Not that anybody was volunteering to do anything anyway. They weren't offering me any great therapies or any great course of action. So it was kind of like my life didn't have to change. It was something that I had to mull over while I was still a new mom, and then he just started to, so I, as it got close to like Thanksgiving of that year that I had my first diagnosis, he was like, I think I have some GI issues, and he had lost weight. He'd always been thin, so it never was really that evident. And people would say, you look extra thin.
Yeah.
And he'd say, but, these pants still fit and, stuff like that. Finally, he was like, I just have been having so much problems with my GI system, and I think it's, I think it's an irritable bowel syndrome. And and so I remember just our first drive home that Thanksgiving, he was like, I had to take the Uber driving because he was like, I'm just really sick. And I said, we'll start with the family doctor, and he's like, I know what it is, but I said, still, you need to go this route. he's sped along because at this point you don't get a colonoscopy when you're under 50. You know, this
Right.
was probably 8 years
That's
ago
not their
now.
first go-to. Yeah.
So he needed some clearance too before he even got that. I kind of had this bad feeling that it was not what he thought it was, but I was, you know, fine with him to go with that. So then I remember being at his colonoscopy and the guy came out and he was still so, and I guess this is why I go through my life holding on to the people who have that perspective, that glass half full sort of perspective. Maybe it's rose colored glasses. I've also heard toxic positivity. You can take it, you know, whichever way you wanted to define it. But he, you know, the guy came out and he said, look, I found a tumor. It's kind of large, but I can get it. And we'll take it out, but we'll do some other tests first. But you know, we're going to take care of you. And I was like, that is not good. You know, and Bob was like, feeling like, oh, okay, all right. He just felt relief finally because it was such a massive
An
tumor that he
answer.
just said,
Yeah.
yes. And it meant that they were going to relieve his immediate pain. He had been in extreme pain. Like that night, he had slept in an upright chair and turned out this large tumor had been pressing on his back.
Oh my
So
God.
just addressing that he had this large tumor meant that he'd have relief of the back pain, which he did. You know, so going through that was like sort of you always remember that face and that process and that. And then when it was let, I remember my son had his first birthday on the day that Bob had had like his MRI, and they said, well, hold up on that because you got it all over. His liver was enlarged. It was a lot of lived in his pelvic bone. You know, there's a lot of bad places. But again, he got hooked up with this young oncologist, and he was like, "All right." He said, "What do you want from me?" And my husband's like, "I want you to make me better." You know, maybe even I said that. I said, "Just make him better." That's what I said. He said, "All right, I'll do that. I'll do that." And you know, never, you know, he was like, "Oh, did he give you a time?" No, he didn't say you have this time. He didn't say, you know, he said, okay. Because at this
Sort of
point,
it.
who really knew how it was going to work? Some people
Right.
have gotten through the treatments and it's like they almost have complete remission. And some people don't make it past the first year because it just didn't work. He went on for 6.5 years. So it was a blessing. I can't say there weren't some curses in between. You know,
Yeah.
he had to have radiation. He had a lot of setbacks. He had one sphere put in and it fractured his spleen. And he was like, in case you can't imagine, it was a terrible feeling. And when I went to pick him up, he had been discharged. So he's laying there in the emergency room. Now, remind you, this is a urban environment. Screaming on the gurney and something, and no one's looking at him.
Oh
Like
my gosh.
they're walking around because what happened was they discharged him from the same day sphere procedure, but no one else had picked up his care. They had only decided, oh, he's still in pain, so let me take him to the ER at this point, and they left him
Oh my
there.
God.
You know, those are things that get to me because I'm thinking, oh wow, if he was an older person,
Yeah.
he probably would not have tolerated that well. And then who, you know, those are all experiences that you pick up throughout the years. But again, it does pay to have an advocate. I think let's put that out there. Because if I hadn't been there to pick him up, what would have happened? How long would it have taken for someone to say, who is this guy screaming ever? Literally in the middle. Now, the other problem is this is a teaching hospital, as most are around here. So like some of them are just like intern. So they're like, well,
Well, you
I'm not
knew.
gonna find out why this guy's screaming over there because it's not on my caseload
That's
or you know.
exactly. That's not my patient, right?
Yeah. Anyway, after I got a couple, I said this is one of those things if I had videotaped and went viral, would have been like devastating to somebody, but I just handled it the best way I could. I said, could somebody help me? So again, like I said, it was the last thing to have him as long as we could. It was a struggle. A lot of times he said, you know, I'm doing this just for you guys. You know, and it was challenging because there were times I wanted to just take care of myself and do what I needed to do, but obviously everybody else needed me. So kind of how it went. And as I hate to sound that this dismal reporting amongst all my other optimism, but I, you know, all along I would go for appointments and it would just say, just come back. It's just going to be the same. There's, you know, we don't have much for you right now, but keep doing what you're doing because it seems to be working. And I was like, well, you know, there's all these treatment options offered, man. There's nothing. Right. There's not, like, you know, you don't care even to just keep trying something else out. Just say, and again, I think when you are capable, people are just glad to let you keep going on being that way.
Yeah. But it's almost like you got to be in worse shape to get some, you know, like to shake the trees enough to get some attention to say, you know,
exactly.
What should I do? So when you were diagnosed with FSHD, I mean, did you just basically, I mean, I wasn't even handed a pamphlet. It was like this as like, we'll do a DNA test to make sure, but pretty sure. He's like, I wrote a paper on it. So I know a little bit of what I'm seeing, kind of given that credibility. Cause like it is rare. That's another question for you too. But for you, like, do you feel like you were just basically handed the diagnosis and then off you go?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I was plugged in to the MDA and I kept pressing for whatever options they had. At the time, they offered one free physical therapy session, which I utilized.
Okay.
And then kept going back, never getting told I had a bill, then found out I had a $500 copay waiting to be paid. And I was like, what are all these signs saying you collected each appointment? And I find out after so many appointments that, you know, needless to say, I didn't go back for that. But I can still remember seeing one physician and he said, all right, you know, you got this, you're good with that. Okay. All right, well, I'll see you next year. Unless you're too busy, you don't have to come in. That'll be fine. And I was like, thanks, buddy. I switched from him and it went to another person. I wanted someone that was like as concerned as I was about losing abilities. I couldn't imagine how you walk in with one disorder and you know, practitioners are so you know, excited about getting you a treatment, getting, if not healing you, at least helping you. And it's just, can you walk up the stairs? Yes. Yeah. Okay, good. All right. That's great. Keep doing it. I'm like, you're just charting my demise. Is that what we're here for?
Right. Because, oh man.
I'm looking for something different. It's such a different treatment modality than most other, diseases. So that's been disheartening, except that I kept pressing. And so I do regular physical therapy now. But I don't know if you've come into the same sort of situation where even my physical therapist says it's a real fine line between, you know, maintaining the strength you have and not losing some of it because you overdid it.
Right.
So, you know, that's a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a struggle, but like I see a physical therapist too. Now he used to be my boss. So I used to work for him and he was the PT and I was the front desk guy. And then only recently I'm like, hey, his name is Joby. He's like, hey Joby, you know, I got XYZ knee pains and stuff. He's like, well, let me assess you. And all of a sudden he's like, just sit down. He just starts poking away.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you know, and like he's a doctor of physical therapy. He's got the full gambit of education behind him. I've seen him work with other patients. I had a lot of confidence in him. And then from there, he's like, he goes, I got a plan. He goes, I think we can develop a plan. Okay. And we start walking that plan. What I like about it is there's not too many times he sees it as this is Tim with FSHD. He treats me almost like this is like an athlete trying to get healing.
Better.
Trying to get better. So what can we do to gain that mobility?
Strength.
He's really concentrating on mobility. I think it really depends on the kind of PT that you find that you're comfortable with, that can challenge you at the same time. Know, I guess, those limitations, but not even.
Yeah.
Not
acknowledge them. But
acknowledge
not,
them. Yeah. But not like concentrate them. Oh, no, we can't do that. Oh, no, we can't do that. And like, I'll be in a session and he'll be like, let's do. And I'll see him like he's thinking. Okay, let's try it this way, because he knows, you know, if I have him do this, that might not work. So let me alter and have him do this.
Right.
And he's teaching himself how to do those adaptations so that I can, you know, do the exercise get what I need out of it. So it is, that for me is a good dynamic. I hope everybody had that. The thing of it is though, I'm not having that dynamic with my doctor, you know, my neurologist. It's the same experience you're talking about. It's like, I love that, charting your demise. Are we just like, okay, you can't do this, but you could last year? I mean, people the term baseline. Let's get a baseline. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, like what is that really doing? You know, have you found with the work you've either done with the PT or the work maybe you've even done on your own, you know, Trish, compared to a doctor, where do you think you're getting the more positive headway?
Yes, certainly with the physical therapist. Yeah. But it's, I have a lady now, so I'm able to turn everything into like a little date night. So we like chat about a bunch of stuff. You know, and that being specific, like I've noticed that the physical therapists I've had, some are just, they have these prescribed exercises that they know work for building strength, but then they'd never work with someone that isn't going to get to the point of I guess normalcy. I don't know what you would call it, you know.
Yeah, what other word?
So when they start with something and you can't do it, it takes a little bit of that, like, you know, your own physical therapist, he's reworking it. How, you know, how can you really approach this, strengthening that muscle and such?
Yeah.
But overall, I've enjoyed working with a physical therapist, even with those that you could tell had the obvious hesitation, because their, you know, their skill set comes with applying these exercises to someone who could eventually improve and get better. And I know that that's not necessarily the case, nor do I have all of that muscle to apply to a particular exercise. I have, now maybe this is just because of my own gender, but I have found more enthusiasm for women. You know, I had some male neurologists and they seem more, I guess more able to rely on the just, okay, well, you're doing it. So that's just good enough for us now. Whereas the women, and maybe again, tend to be more listeners or empaths. Yeah. You know, and I'm generalizing, of course. But in my experiences, they hear that and they say, yeah, I can understand how frustrating it is. And I'm working to get towards something like that. Particularly the neurologist I'm working with now. And she is down south, which I think sometimes, you know, like my PT said last appointment, she's like, well, I don't think the healthcare is that great down here. Now she's from Texas. And also, I think even before that lived, I know she lived in Italy, but I think she also lived in New York too. So having that idea that, you know, most of the major treatment are going to come out of, like, you know, New York or Pennsylvania or maybe some spots in California. But I said, you know what, to tell you the truth, I was pushed off just as much in Philadelphia as I have been at, you know, MUSC. I don't think it's a regional thing per se, because at this point, everyone's kind of going through the same treatment. You know, maybe if you were at a place where they were actually doing the research, you might find a little bit more enthusiasm for improvement. Right. But
they're not. Yeah, they just don't have a clue, right? They just don't know it.
Yes, I think I have a younger female neurologist now, and that she just finished her fellowship, and so she still has some of that enthusiasm. You know, that maybe they could change. But I keep trying to impress upon these practitioners that I was doing normal things. I was running through my 20s. I was doing, you know, yoga and some complicated things. And now I can't. And that's awkward to me. And you can tell me it's because of this and other. And I've said too, I know that's selfish. I know there's other kids that never got out of a wheelchair. And I feel terrible that they didn't experience some of the things that I did. But for someone that has had this, I'm waiting for you to tell me, you know, we have this and we know that, so we're going to work on doing this. But, you know, just saying, okay, you're doing good at physical therapy, that's good. Like, that's
right.
That's, you know, where they're excited about.
It's interesting because you and I'm going to kind of steal your words from that initial email where you kind of said, that you feel more supported in the progression of the disease as opposed to being supported in the fight against the disease. And it sounds like to me that's exactly what you're describing here, right?
Yeah.
With the baseline visits, and then this is where you are now compared to where you were then, you know, charting your demise and those kinds of things. And to me, that all equals frustration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that ultimately
exactly
your take?
And that's also, I honestly have not conveyed to my children any of this. It's still, you know, they lost the parent and they watched him to be treated. So how do I say I have something that really isn't going to be treated?
Right.
And again, right now they just operate that I may be different, but that's how I'm always different. So that's just me. And I can carry on and do whatever. And I'm also able to build muscle and no problem in other areas. So from that aspect, it would seem unreasonable to be something of that regard. Besides, who doesn't want to think their parents strong? You know, that's, you know, they just feel that way. And yes, it was also more profound of a reason for me to be fine when their dad is gone, because that just, you know, my son was 5 when he passed. So, even when I had COVID, they were like, and my older son, I mean, he was probably 12. He's like, you're going to be okay, right? And I literally was just taking a nap. And I was like, yeah, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Just give me a nap, my own child. That's all mom needs is a nap.
But still, right? I mean, their perspective of things is, you know.
Yeah.
They feel vulnerable. And then they're looking for the security. They look to you. Right? So they're laying on them. Oh, yeah, by the way, I have this FSHD thing. That's going to slowly, you know, whittle me down to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right. That's the last thing I can understand that you'd want to deliver to somebody in that situation.
Right. Oh, well, how do you treat it? You don't.
I mean, how do you, I know, I'm sure some people are like, gosh, Tim is so insensitive. You know, like when I laugh about it, but it is, it's almost ridiculous.
No.
Like to tell someone, here's what you have. I've just laid this on you. There's no cure, no treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I hear, it is not life threatening, but life shortening.
Yeah. My first neurologist said, you're not going to die from it. I was like, okay, I'm just going to feel like I am. You know.
Yeah. Right. It's still a diagnosis.
I don't know if I want to prove him wrong or not. I don't know.
Right. No, totally. Yeah. And it's, to me, it's a flawed system for the majority of physicians that deal with the disease. My own primary, I have to tell him more about it than you know, he tells me about it. He doesn't know anything, not that I expect him. And then my neurologist, the same thing. It's, there's support, there's good conversations, but I think I knew about some of the clinical trials happening more than they did. You know, it's like,
right.
Like, why am I here? You know, people are searching for answers. They're searching for hope, whatever that search is. There's a lot of common within that searching, even though there's all different people that have it, and all different progressions of it from young to old, et cetera, and all different points, but all still have this same encompassing, hey, I have this feeling of like, it's just like, I need an answer. Like I need something, give me a path. So for you, what would you do differently? If you were a doctor in the situation of having to work with someone with FSHD, what would be more your delivery? What would be more kind of what you would rather see?
Well, I think the most important thing would be to impress upon the person that we are trying to seek treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't get a lot of that. I get, okay, well, you can try some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting reassurance that they are seeking out ways in which to treat this. You know, you hear so much about, you can't watch TV for 10 minutes without hearing at least 3 drug commercials.
Yeah.
And yet there's never any talk of, oh, they're, you know, they're trying this for that. They're trying, you know, I'm not getting complied for anything.
No, it's not there.
I will say my doctor offered me steroids, prednisone. And I'm taking it. I've been taking it probably for maybe it's been a year. I forget entirely. I'm in a time warp. Maybe it was maybe it's been 6 months. Let's go with that. 6 months. But when she said, you know, I'm going to prescribe prednisone. Oh, really? This is like, yeah, it might not do anything, but just take it.
It's like vitamin C. You know, it might help, might not.
Yeah. Now, look, that it was fabulous for me just to get something, but I'm thinking like, she, like, I don't even know where this information came from. She could have just been like an ad fell out from the prednisone company. And she was like, I could give that to her. Sure. Let's do that. So maybe it is all in the delivery and I should just get over it that, you know, she gave it to me. And honestly, my physical therapist has noticed improvements. I've noticed improvements. I'm sticking with it. So,
as well,
I never heard why. I never heard studies that approved. I never heard, you know, how it relates to anything. Never. So maybe as a physician, I'd say, you know what, this is what we're coming up with. You know, it may work, it may not. We've seen this. I've come to them and said, look, I found creatine in studies that say this. Well, sure, you could try it.
Why is that coming from us though, right? Like, how come it's not sitting down when someone gets diagnosed and going, you know, here's where we are at with trials, here's where we're at with, you know, research. If you want to get involved in some of those things, where you go. These are some home type remedies that maybe, there's no data that necessarily say it's a cure, but it's actually made people feel either better emotionally, physically, etc. You can try this. You know, that to me is a proper course or a proper plan of let's try these things. Give people something to give them nothing. It's like, you drop this.
Can you think of any other disability?
I'm sure they're out there, but when I deliver my story to people, I understand, you know, cancer, that is the big, right. That is the big nasty. No one wants that. I get it. But a lot of people we've all met in your life with your husband, there was a plan. You've described it today, and that's good to me. At least there's that. So it's like, where is the plan for FSHD? And now there's more research and there's more things down the pipeline, as we are being told, than ever. Well, then how come the doctors don't know that when we are going? Unless you have to find.
Why do they seem disinterested?
Right. Well, why are they disinterested? And why is it only like a handful of them that are, you know, the good doctors in the group where they know the news, they know how to share it. And then we're hearing that from some of the people within the FSHD community. But, you know, I'm in the middle of the country. I'm not going out to San Diego to go talk to someone about my disease. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That's nonsense. How come there's not a collective, you know, this is what we're talking about, just period, that are going to deal with this? Yet. Which kind of leads me then to this next, you know, question. One of my last, I promise. But the question of it being called rare, you know, a rare disease. I think it's one of the most misdiagnosed ones, in my opinion. I mean, I see... Yeah, I'm a baseball coach. I work with a lot of young people. And there are certain players where they cannot get their arm up at all to throw a ball. It is just here and that is it. And I've had coaches almost angry at him going, you got to get your elbow up. And I'm like, they might not be able to. Like, they actually might have a snap problem. And if they do, what does that mean? My mind immediately goes to FSHD.
Right.
I wonder, you know, and I wonder if there's more of that happening. Are these little pesky things that movements and certain things in young people or older people, they just kind of, you know, brush it off. But if they were actually diagnosed, would they have FSHD? So I guess the question is, do you think it's really rare as people think it is? Or do you think there's more out there?
I think my answer to that would depend on the day. Cause sometimes I feel like the only person in the world that's like messed up.
Well said.
And then other times I would wholeheartedly agree with your observation that there's a lot more people dealing with nuances to their, you know, anatomy than can be just attributed to just being, you know, awkward. So I guess that lends to the idea that if more people were to have that association with them, you know, having the disability, would people be more interested in curing it or, you know, finding treatment modalities for it? Because if you had that many people coming in being told they have this disease, how many people would be comfortable with going home and just going back next year to see if they can still, you know, raise a glass or brush their hair or brush their teeth? Like, okay, sure. Yeah. You know, more people would be putting up a stink, and then they would, doctors would have to give them an answer because they know they'd have, you know, if they saw five patients a day, they'd say, I have to come up with an answer for each of these patients because they're not going to go home with, see you next year, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. It's just that.
So last question for you, Trish, then, is this. I usually deliver this one as one of the last ones to a lot of the guests that we've had on. And someone recently diagnosed, right, happens to be watching, listening, et cetera. What is your, you know, key advice, or maybe advice even to, like, what tools should they be looking to bring to the fight, in your opinion, you know, against FSHD when they're starting off?
Well, all right. Let me be very spontaneous and say what came to mind was just to stay strong. And I don't mean just a cliche or something that you might see on a mug somewhere. I mean physically and mentally, because sometimes you're going to feel like, I just can't do it, but then find something that you really can do, and that will motivate you to keep working on the thing you can't. Just stay strong. And that's just something to apply to your whole resolve, because, like, you might lay there in bed and think like, oh, this is going to be a lot to deal with. What am I? Well, you know, if you have this mentality that I'm going to stay committed to, you know, doing things I have to do to feel better, then you'll feel better. You know, and when you go to that appointment and you come away feeling worse than when you went in, stay strong. Like, so then that place is, you're going to apply that mentally. Like, all right, I'll keep looking for something that helps me. You know, if you do get the opportunity to go to a physical therapy appointment and you feel like you just don't want to do that exercise because you're realizing your body can't do it, no, keep trying. And my physical therapist told me too, because I hate doing these arm exercises because I just can't do them. I can't. And like, don't just do the things you can do. You have to do these other things. So, but sometimes it's so frustrating to say, I'm telling my arm to move that way and it won't. Why won't it move? It's just so frustrating. But one day it will move more. One day it might not move at all, but some days it might move an inch more than it ever did before. But it will get easy to get stuck on the things that just don't move, because sometimes it feels like that's bigger than all the parts that do. You know, you just have to, that's, you know, I think, again, I hate if it sounds like a cliche to say strong, you know, Nike, just do it. But sometimes you just, you know, and I've read a couple things, you know, just even through grief process, I think borrowing some of those mantras that help you, find a word that helps you. And it's just say it again, say it again, say it again. You know, one of my good girlfriends sent me like a religious based thing. So it was like, find a word for each year, you know, maybe it would be faith, maybe it would be praise, something that would just, if you said it when you had a tough time, it would help you get the resolve to get through what you were getting through. But, you know, sometimes I am up against a wall in terms of like dealing with an insurmountable amount of stress, just, you know, even in my general life. And then I'm trying to put a glass away and it can't quite get there. And I'm like, I'm either going to break the glass or I'm going to get it up there. And, you know, 50-50. It's, sometimes it's either one. But, you know, when I get it up there, I feel great.
Yeah.
Because I stuck with it and did it. And if I broke it, then I'm just going around.
Right. Now they just get another one. Reason to go shopping.
Exactly. Right. But I think I'd be more mad at myself if I didn't try, you know, over in the long run. So.
Agreed. Well, thanks, Trish, for being here, giving us all your great advice, insight. It was just as good as I hoped it would be, because you kind of hit it right on target with the email. And I thought immediately, I'd love to have this person on to kind of give their perspective. I like the edge that it delivers. I think it's things people are thinking and not everyone's saying. And I appreciate you coming on to talk about it.
All right. Thank you so much for having me. Good luck with all the things that you're putting out there, and your work is appreciated.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks, Trish.
Bye.
Bye. That is Trish out in, I guess we're staying in South Carolina, and I give her credit for moving somewhere warm. And there's you know, key factors within the interviews always. And my biggest one is, A, we found probably one of the best lines we've ever had in the programs, and that is FSHD people, in essence, have the sexiest walks, those that are walking, or maybe the sexiest role as well, for those, you know what I'm talking about. And then, you know, are we just charting our demise? Interesting. I think the interesting takeaway for me then, I immediately think, and I, you know, people ask all the time, what's Tim writing down? What is Tim writing down? Kind of key words. You know, we go to our physician, a neurologist, a lot of us, and I don't want to speak for everybody's experience, but for the vast majority of I'm finding is that they're charting your demise for sure. They're tracking your decline. Here's your baseline, and here's you where you are, and then where you are, and then maybe you're here for a little bit, and then you're down. As my doctor said, stair falls, and so it goes. I've never been in a doctor's office with this, and someone said, "Well, Tim, let's create a goal. Let's create a goal that if you're having a hard time with this movement or whatever, let's reach a goal of let's try to maintain it, and then here is a plan with PT or something that I think might work. Okay, and then now let's see where we're at in 6 months, a year. Can we maintain, or can we even get it better? Let's find the parts of the body that we can get better." Stronger even, and then so it goes. But that takes a lot of work, right? It takes a lot of details, it takes a lot of caring, it takes a lot of conversation. It takes a longer appointment than 5 minutes. This is where you are. Oh, sorry, you went down. Yeah, I know, I'm living in this body. Thank you, Dr. Obvious, and off you go. Sometimes it feels like that. And I'm not saying everybody, but it definitely does for me quite a bit. And that's kind of where the introduction to Trish came with that email, kind of, you know, came right between the eyes with it, like, this is how I feel. This is what I've been experiencing. Has anybody else been experiencing this? Not to mention in my family where we've dealt with colon cancer, loss, and this and that. I'm sure other people are going through this. She reaches out. Took us a little bit to finally connect together, but it happened, right? It was actually December in 2023. So, I mean, it was took me some time. I'm not proud of that fact. I can do better for everybody and get you on the show a lot faster than that. But she is steadfast getting on the show, and I'm glad she did. Then also too, I also wanted to plug that, make sure that, I mean, these episodes are brought to you by the FSHD Society. Go to fshdsociety.org. You can find a lot of great things there. And I don't know if anybody has ever clicked on, because we already are diagnosed, the newly diagnosed button. It's actually very interesting. It has some good things in there, including, you are not alone, a guide to newly diagnosed. It might be good even those that are currently diagnosed and have known for a while. I don't think there's anything bad about that. For kids, a guide for schools that still might be helpful now, even if you're not recently diagnosed. Physical therapy for FSHD, that's in there too, and so forth. So, and also a plug for the show. But that's another tab that maybe we don't click on because, well, I'm not recently diagnosed. That's not for me. It actually could be. So I challenge you to do that. Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us again on another episode. More episodes to come. You maybe have found us on YouTube, maybe through fshdsociety.org, or anywhere else you find podcasts. Where I find mine is through Spotify. We are on there as well. So thanks for being a part of this community, taking the time to have me either if it's YouTube watching, or if you're listening in your ears. Thanks for having me aboard in your day today, and look forward to talking and seeing you again soon. You've been listening to FSHD Straight Talk. Take care.